Chapter 17. Terror, the Imperial Palace. There was no scream, no cry. Now the time of the great silence had come. The eyes of the people of Terra had been on the Orc moon. No one had expected to see the crusade, though the collective imagination of the Emperor's subjects had landed with the Armada. All who were watching saw the end of the crusade. The movement of the mountains was visible from Terra. It looked like an eye closing, a wink, a mockery directed at its hapless prey. Vangarich saw it happen from the Cerebrium. He was alone. The other High Lords were in session. They had remained in the Great Chamber for the length of the crusade. The effort had been less heroic than they had expected. The war had lasted less than a day. The movement seemed small on the surface of the planetoid. It was a minor rearrangement of its geography. Vangarich knew what it meant, though. He had told himself that he had nothing invested in Tull's folly. He was wrong. He discovered that when he felt a vice crush something in his chest. He thought of the reports that had come back about the Star Fortress over Ardamantua. How it had been a face. How it had spoken. He hadn't thought about the scale involved in such movement. He did now. He pictured being on the surface of the moon, of being caught in that collision of mountain chains. Of being so insignificant that so small a gesture extinguished him. He sighed and left the Cerebrium. He supposed he should be present for the end of the farce in the Great Chamber. He would bear witness. If Venand or a savior not yet present in the Sol system produced a miracle, then there would still be a reckoning. He encountered the silence when he entered the Great Chamber. The Parliament was as full as it had been at the launch of the Crusade. The Assembly sat, robbed of volition. 100,000 servants of the Imperium, empty. There were some sobs. The weeping was so scattered and weak that it made the silence all the more palpable. The stillness extended to the dais. Joscina Tull had been the presiding presence on the dais for the entire duration of the crusade. As word of the landings had arrived, she had grown even more in stature, her energy of speech and gesture reaching for the superhuman. Now she was shrunken on herself. Her face, wan, seemed to vanish beneath the dead hand of her robe's glamour. Vangarich thought of that moment, walking with Veritas in the aftermath of Tull's first speech, when he had contemplated the assassination of Tull and all the lords who had stood with her. He had judged the move pointless. He believed he had been correct. Even so, he regretted the decision, and thought, "I carry my portion of the day's shame." The Pict screens that had been installed around the dais showed static. Vangarich mounted the dais. He evaluated the silence of the other High Lords. Tull's allies were as defeated as she was. Fabricator General Kubik was looking from static to static on the screens. Now and then, he uttered a short burst of binary cant, as if making notes to himself. Veritas looked thoughtful, but far from defeated.
"Are you going to share your optimism with the rest of the Senatorum, Inquisitor?" Vangarich asked. "Do you see a way forward?"
Veritas frowned.
"Your levity is misplaced," he said.
"Is it?"
He paused, then nodded.
"I believe you're right."
He turned his gaze on Tull and her allies.
"We've had enough of lunatic frivolities."
The screen to the left of Udo's throne flickered back to life.
"It's Lansung,"
the Lord Commander said. Lansung's image steadied.
"We've picked up a signal," he said. "A ship has left the Orc Moon. It's on a trajectory for Terra." "The attack has begun?"
Veriold asked.
"No, this is a single ship. It's Terran and transmitting identification codes. It's a merchant vessel. The Militant Fire."
"What is your recommendation, Lord High Admiral?"
Vangarich asked.
"To let it arrive. This can't possibly be the invasion."
"Then what is it?"
Eckarth asked. The master of the Administratum's cry was childlike. It snapped Mezing from his catatonia. The glow of inspiration suffused his face. He stood up. He began to speak. Encouraged by the Ecclesiarch, Eckarth's cry was taken up. It emerged from the silence, a reed-thin complaint from the depths of an echoing well.
"What is it? What is it? What is it?"
The news of the approaching ship rippled out from the Great Chamber to spread across Terra. The ship could be seen only by Terra's sensor arrays, but the haunted souls who stared at the moon imagined they could trace the path of the militant fire.
What is it? What is it? What is it?
Mesring's sermon fed the question. It offered no answers. It took theories apart. The orcs were not attacking. The ship could not be a doomsday weapon because it was too small. And what would be the point?
Perhaps, Mesring said, we are witness to a miracle. Perhaps, by the grace of the Father of Mankind, this blessed vessel has been delivered from our foe.
An escape. The flight of a single ship could not offer true hope. But it was a dream.
What is it? It is a sign.
The cry of frightened children was answered by a call to prayer. Summoned, the people came. Faith was the last refuge. They turned to it with a vengeance. The militant fire lay at the heart of the prayers. The people did not look to it for hope, but they prayed to the God Emperor that it would become the source of hope. In the great chamber, Mesring led the senatorum in worship. Vangarich watched him with a mixture of contempt and admiration. Tull's moment had passed. The power dynamic of the High Lords had been in flux again with the failure of the Proletarian Crusade, and within minutes, Mesring had the whip hand. Impressive and pointless. How long did Mesring think the orcs would allow him to enjoy his supremacy? Mesring's sermon was not long. He gave the yearning of the populace a shape, then cast them back into a silence from which his voice would only be the more welcome when it returned. He sat down and bowed his head, his hands clasped. Vangarich rose. He walked over to stand before the ecclesiarch.
Tell me, he said, what if there is no miracle aboard that ship?
Mesring looked up. He was calm as only a man who was as devout as he was devious could be.
Then we will need our spiritual strength all the more.
Vangarich swallowed his disgust and turned to Veriolt.
Is the Astra Militarum putting all of its trust into the divine?
A company of the Lucifer Blacks will meet the ship.
But not you.
My place is here.
Of course it was. There might be more power plays in the time it would take for the fire to arrive. The High Lords would be keeping each other under observation. Vangarich left. All he would see here would be the rearranging of furniture in a burning house. He made his way to the daylight wall. The Lucifer Blacks were attempting to take the place of the Imperial Fists. The sight of simple mortals in guard posts that had been manned by giants drove the loss home again. Vangarich spoke to the officer of the watch. The ship, he learned, was transmitting a request for permission to land at the inner palace's pocket spaceport. Vangarich considered the risk that the ship might be a bomb, come to wipe out the Terran leadership. The idea was so far removed from every aspect of the orc way of war that he snorted. He passed through the gates of the wall. He would meet the ship, and whatever news it brought. The spaceport was not far beyond the daylight wall, and was visible from the high gardens. It was reserved for high dignitaries from other systems, and could accommodate a handful of lighters at a time. The militant fire, though a small merchant ship, was large for the space. When it arrived, Vangarich watched with approval as its pilot dropped the vessel between the spires of the Imperial Palace with an assured precision. Retro rockets extinguished, exhaust from the descent dissipating into the grimy air of the palace, the ship sat in gathering silence for several minutes before a door rose on the port side of Nose. A staircase descended. Then nothing more for a few minutes. The Lucifer Black's rifles were trained on the dark entranceway. The figure that at last appeared was human enough. The man's clothes were expensive, though his coat was torn now. His face was grey with exhaustion and fear. He raised his arms over his head.
My name is Leander Narcissus, he said. Captain of the militant fire, please don't shoot. No one on the ship is armed.
He waited, looking like a man who didn't particularly care if he was gunned down. Vangarich walked forward on the landing pad and joined the commanding officer of the Lucifer Blacks.
What is your name, Captain?
Mercado, Grandmaster.
The situation is tense, I know, and so are your troops. Unthinking fire is the last thing we need at this juncture, don't you agree?
He kept his voice calm, his tone light.
Mikado nodded. Hold fire, he shouted. Weapons down, but keep them ready. Come down, Vangarich called to Narcissus, and he advanced until he was a few meters away from the base of the steps, visible to all the nervous soldiers. Narcissus lowered his arms and took the stairs slowly. He wobbled when he reached the landing pad. Vangarich stepped forward and steadied him.
Did you escape? He asked.
No. Narcissus looked back up at the doorway. They want to be escorted to the senatorum.
Vangarich followed his gaze. He almost asked who, but he knew the answer. Beneath the denial that even he maintained for the sake of his sanity, he had known since the ship's approach was first detected. Three orcs appeared. They descended the steps, and then they were there, on the landing pad, on Terra, near the heart of the Imperial Palace. Vangarich was not religious, yet his stomach turned at the obscenity of the greenskin's presence. He fought down his atavistic response. He shouted, "Hold your fire!" because the Lucifer Blacks would need to hear that command again. He forced himself to examine the orcs so he at least might have some rational understanding of the Imperium's foe. He already knew he would be one of the few, apart from Kubik, to be capable of clear thought, and he didn't trust the Fabricator General to be candid with his insights. Vangarich had studied all the reports the Mechanicus had made available about the resurgent orcs. He had also read more than a few documents that the cult of the Omnissiah had preferred to keep to itself. One of the recurring themes of the studies, which the Mechanicus emphasized with undisguised enthusiasm, was novelty. These orcs kept producing new weapons, acting in new ways. The pattern continued now. Vangarich looked at the orcs before him and felt another unwelcome shock of the new. All three were big. Two of them were a full head taller than he was. The third was half again as large. A leader and two subordinates, then. They wore thick leather decorated with the brutal signs of the orc clans. The clothing seemed more like robes of office than armor. What alarmed Vangarich most was not the unusual garb, though, but what the orcs did not have. They were unarmed. Vangarich stared at this impossibility. The leader held a staff. It was 3 meters long, made of iron. Its girth was decorated with clusters of skulls. Some were human, others Eldar, and many from species Vangarich didn't recognize. The skulls were iron also, their jaws agape in an agony of death. Real teeth hung from a coil of wire that spiraled the length of the staff. The crown was a representation of an orc face, snarling in victory and hunger. The staff was formidable, but it was not a weapon. By the standards of what Vangarich knew about the greenskins, it was an artistic masterpiece. The orcs watched him steadily. They were calm, motionless, and so even more disturbing. All it would take on his part was a simple gesture. He could turn his head, nod at Mikado, and the orcs would be gunned down. The consequences of that choice, he knew, would not be pleasant.
Follow me, he said to Narcissus.
The Lucifer Blacks followed. He led a dark procession to the great chamber. Vangarich was conscious of every heavy step of the orcs behind him. Xenos boots on Terran marble beat the rhythm of the Imperium's humiliation and of the craven failure of the High Lords. He counted himself among the guilty. What did he have to show for his machinations? Playing host to the invader. Narcissus walked like a man approaching his execution.
Tell me who they are, Vangarich said.
The trader whispered a terrible word.
Ambassadors.
That isn't possible.
I know.
So it was true then. Vangarich felt colder inside with every passing moment. Their arrival at the great chamber was greeted by a collective gasp, followed by a growing murmur of rage.
Udo rose from his seat. He pointed at Narcissus. What have you brought into this sacred place? He thundered.
There was no threat in his bluster. He was an empty gesture given embodiment. Narcissus didn't flinch. He didn't even look at the Lord Commander. His eyes were unfocused. He was staring at something more vivid and frightening than the High Lords or the Orcs. A recent memory, perhaps, or a vision of the near future.
They're ambassadors, Vangarich said,
the word alien in his mouth. He mounted the dais. The orcs remained where they were. Their yellow sunken eyes watched the High Lords.
Are you their interpreter?
He asked Narcissus, wondering how the man had come to know the Xenos tongue. Narcissus looked up now. He shook his head. Miserable.
Don't need an interpreter, the lead orc said. We tell you how to surrender. You surrender. Easy.